Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, veterans of all ages, veterans across our nation and beyond. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, we're going to continue on in the same vein that we started a few weeks ago, and hopefully we're going to do this once a month or whatever we can arrange as we get the medical staff to help us. We're going to continue on our discussion on alternatives to medication for pain management. I mean, pain management amongst all of us is a significant problem. I know none of us want to use as many drugs as, you know, as little as possible. So we have to figure out how can we manage our pain. What are the other alternatives to reduce the need? That doesn't mean we're not going to take the pain meds, or we're not going to say that anybody should stop taking them. In fact, you need to keep taking them on as prescribed. But there's also other techniques that can help us. Well, Charles, shall we continue on with our ideas on pain management and the idea of being in the now?
Fabulous. I look forward to it. Doug, last month when we went over the subject, I couldn't help but feel that that the veterans, if they were listening, they may really have got a good understanding of why and how the now is so important. And, you know, when we have acute pain, and acute pain lasts for a certain period of time, and then, as you spoke about, we have what we call chronic pain. Well, the medical people, they can address acute pain very well. But when it comes to this long-term pain, it becomes a whole different story. And in the pain school at Danville VA, we have put forward a number of different modalities which any veteran can use, and they should use, in order to take a proactive approach against their chronic pain. And we offer diet and nutrition guidance, health and spirituality, Tom Mills presents that course. We go about alternative healing such as acupuncture, acupressure, biofeedback. We talk about how to use mindfulness meditation, relaxation, yes, go ahead, and also deep breathing. And there are some other ones as well, Doug.
You know, something that works real well for me, and I'm right in the middle of it now, and I actually found somebody really good in occupational medicine, is a deep muscle massage to alleviate all of the muscle tension and the chronic tightness and everything else and the spasming. But again, that doesn't mean, and I want to reiterate this, and I mean the same thing, and we've talked about this, and we've talked about with the experts you and I both know, that doesn't mean that you don't take your meds. But what you're trying to do is reduce the need for meds and try to reduce the overall pain cycle by doing all these things. So acupuncture works. All these different things work to achievement. But one of the things that I think all of us agree on, and I've come to think is really at the crux of it, the spirituality and the whole center of this thing and being where your mind is critical to the whole pain management cycle, isn't it?
I agree with that, and I talk about that in my first book, Modern Buddhist Healing, that pain, it starts off as something very organic, yet it has a spiritual root. And how does one get to that point? Well, Western medicine addresses the physical aspects, where Eastern medicine goes into kind of the empty, let's say, empty aspect, the spiritual aspect of pain or disease, discomfort. And how has it been done? And as I said earlier, that this type of relaxation, mindfulness meditation or guided imagery, all these things which are cutting edge today, this is the, I would say, the worst kept secret in pain management. It's been around since the dawn of recorded history. Over 5,000 years, people have been using this, especially in the East, and, you know, where they do meditation. And by doing this, one relaxes themselves, one is able to address where the source of pain is, and they're able to help themselves almost at a molecular level, I would say. And that's what we're trying to do now. And again,
Doug, this is Denise. I got through and able to call in.
Hey, fantastic. And, hi, Denise.
Yeah, I'd like to go on and cover this and know if our doctor that's online knows about RTMS for treatment of pain. That's repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation. And basically, it's a method of delivering brain stimulation using an electromagnetic coil that is gently placed right above your, over your scalp. And they do screen for any medications you're on. It generates kind of a magnetic field that penetrates the scalp to produce very small electrical currents right there at the surface of the brain. And they try to simulate targeted brain regions. There's been studies done on psychiatric conditions, and there is a study currently going on that I'm in. I'm out here in Palo Alto, California right now going through it. It's the RTMS study for pain for our Gulf War veterans for the chronic pain that we have. And let me get the phone number out if people are interested in getting into the study. That phone number is 650-852-3233. Let me repeat that. 650-852-3233. It is a clinical trial study. They're trying to get a total of 206 patients, Gulf War vets, to go through it. And what they're doing is either sham, which, you know, is not, I mean, they simulate it somehow, but the other is the actual treatment. And you come out, if you live far away from California, you can get with them. They'll pay for your travel, put you up in a hotel, a motel, and provide car service back and forth each day. What they did was when I came in Sunday. Monday, they have physical exams. You have to go through their research protocol, which is their physical exams. They do neurocognitive testing, and they do a PET scan. They do an MRI scan, and that's all done on the first day. The second day, you go in for about 2 hours more of neurocognitive studies, paper, you know, surveys. And then they do two treatments that second day, and then you start on a three treatment per day regimen. It's like 20 minutes, and then you have an hour off, and then you have 20 minutes and an hour off, and then 20 minutes, and then you're free to go. And they do that for the two-week period. At the end, they repeat some of the things that you did on your first couple of days. You'll get another MRI and another PET scan, and they'll do some of the neurocognitive testing. So you're out here for 2 weeks, weekend in between. They do provide the transportation. They do provide a motel room and a car service to get you back and forth on your schedule of appointments and going in. They've done a lot of research with psychiatric issues, okay? They've used it on stroke patients, migraine headache patients, psychiatric issues, ringing in the ear, tic disorders, Parkinson's disease, and now this one is really focused on the pain. And it's outpatient. You're awake and alert. You know, you're not given anything. They will assess you on your medications, and normally you don't have to go off any of those. You may, some of the side effects, you may have some tingling of the face or scalp or some temporary numbness. There is a risk for seizures, but it's very, very rare. And it lasts, like I said, 5 to 10 sessions per week. They'll get it in 20 sessions while you're out here for a two-week period. And I just started yesterday with two treatments, and then today I had three treatments, and it's doing very well. You know, no restrictions on your activities. And I want to give out that phone number again. If any of our Gulf War vets want to get in, they are trying to recruit a large study of 206, so we need our Gulf War patients to call in, get the details, and get out here and do this. It's 650-852-3233. So wanted to get that on the air today since I'm out here and participating in it, and we were talking about pain again. So far, I've already noticed some changes. I don't know. I come from Colorado, so when I get to sea level, I always seem to do better instead of at altitude. But it does seem to, yesterday I was kind of surprised. I had some pretty significant neck pain and back pain and, you know, the typical pains you have with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. And like I said, it's hard for me to judge, you know, while I'm here because I'm normally at altitude in Denver and normally feel better when I'm at sea level. So it's a little hard to judge. And, of course, I don't know if I'm getting the sham or the real treatment. But I feel like it might be doing something. So I want to encourage our vets to get involved with the study and do it and see if it helps. It's a good way to do it. You're not put out by any money. If this proves true, then there are RTMS studies throughout the country that you can, you know, get it elsewhere if it helps you.
Yeah, Denise, your cell phone has been breaking up real bad. Charles, did you understand what Denise is talking about?
She explained it very clearly, yet I'm not familiar with what she's talking about. And it sounds like, you know, if they're doing clinical studies on it, that they must feel that there's some benefit. It's a little bit different. I mean, this is one of the modalities or future possible modalities if this comes in to be widely used practice within the VA, that we would be having someone studied up on and talk about that at our pain school, you know, and hopefully we'd be able to offer something if it was beneficial. And that's, if it's on a trial, they just think it might help, you know. It has to go through that double-blind study like she's going through. But we would have to be able to staff somebody, too. Sometimes that's a difficult thing at any VA hospital, as you know. Like right in Springfield right now, there are two doctors short and said it's going to take 2 to 4 months for their references to clear. So, you know, the VA sometimes moves at the speed of a snail, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, the machine itself cost, I was asking him questions yesterday and today to get ready to provide this information. The machine itself is out there and available, you know, throughout the country. You have to kind of, you know, search it down on the internet. But the machine itself runs $150,000. And as we know, for medical equipment, that's not a huge cost to people. And if it gets used and it helps with the chronic pain for our vets, it's so much better than drugs, pain medications, and our pain medications, the VA is really clamping down pain medication. I think that's happening not just for VA, but elsewhere. There's just too much abuse of pain medication, and they've changed the narcotic schedule or level of a lot of the drugs so that you only get a 30-day prescription and have to have it renewed. So these are alternatives that we're talking about today that would help.
And understood.
I do think there is a potential large benefit here.
Yes, but our program really is about is how we can get a lot of these things done without anybody having to go into the doctor's office, wherein that they can practice things such as mindful meditation, guided imagery, deep breathing, these relaxation techniques, which are clinically proven to reduce stress, to put a person in a state of mind where their actual pain number, whether it was a 5 or a 6 or an 8, can be reduced, brought down to a manageable level without needing any more kind of medical intervention. And, you know, whether a machine like this or a technique like this is ultimately proven to be beneficial, that's to be seen. And that's why they have double-blind clinical trials. But this, what we're doing here, has been studied for over 40 years in this country at the various prestigious universities. And mindfulness meditation, for example, has been proven in a laboratory to reduce blood pressure. It improves psychological and physical health. They've been able to put a number on, makes a psychologically younger person, even for a senior citizen, they could decrease their psychological age by almost a decade. So this type of benefit can be had by anybody if they learn how to use these different techniques. And I thought today, Doug, one of the things we wanted to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we could actually walk through for the veterans some of these different meditations or some of these different techniques that people can actually use in the privacy of their own home to generate these significant benefits.
Yeah, I think let's go and do that. I mean, with the veteran being so frustrated, as you said, over here in Springfield, Illinois, physicians in the local paper here, the News Gazette today, it's a mind-boggling exercise. Congressmen are involved in it, and some are avoiding it. So whether or not you can get to a physician or not, you've got to reduce the frustration levels, and you've got to use all these other techniques to help. So when we're talking about this, Charles, you guys are doing it.
Yeah, I've been one of the interesting things, if you go on and you look online, you put famous Buddhists, and this has really nothing to do with Buddhism, and when you're going to come up with President Clinton leading right off the list, which is astonishing. But what happened was when President Clinton had such terrible heart problems, he got a teacher, and he learned how to do these very same techniques that we're going to discuss today, in order to lower his blood pressure and improve his physical and psychological health. And so Bill Clinton is a meditator. It'd be astonishing all the people that are doing this for one reason or another. I was just looking at AARP today, and they had an article on how to beat cancer, and they had Sheryl Crow and Melissa Etheridge featured in this. And for Sheryl Crow, one of the comments that she made is the body functions at a higher level in a cellular fashion when you're relaxed. I now do mindfulness meditation. And she's used this in order to address from her mind or her spirit, the body issue, almost visualizing all the way to a cellular level. So what I thought I would do, I'm going to kind of go a little bit out of sequence here, and I'll show you what I mean. It's kind of a guided meditation that I'd like to walk you and the audience through, so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm not going to ask anybody to get into the now or to do any of this or that, because if you follow what I'm doing, you'll find yourself automatically there. Are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the plan today.
All right. So the first thing that I want our audience members to do, if you can, you're not driving, sit still and close your eyes. And for those driving or unable to close your eyes, follow this carefully with your eyes open. Now that your eyes are closed, you'll only see darkness. This is not hypnosis. I want you to use your inner eye of imagination. Sense the skin on your right hand. Sense your hand. Now your fingers. Now go to your arm, slowly like that, feeling your hand, your elbow, and now your whole arm.
You want to get one of those?
Feel your shoulder, your neck, now your head. Look inside your head. See the brain. Ponder that a moment. See your eyes. Use your inner vision. See all that's inside your head, just like the nasal structure, the inner ear. See the skull, the bones. If you know what a lymph node is, see your lymph nodes and the countless blood vessels and arteries. Now go down inside and scan your chest. Look at your lungs and your heart as it beats the rhythm of your life. Now see your rib cage and internal organs. See your liver, your kidneys, stomach, now your intestines. Look at your bladder. Now go through your urethra all the way down to where you pee. Come back, see your pelvis as it and go down through each leg all the way to your toes. Now, we're going to move further inside our body. There are trillions of cells in our body. Each of them have their own unique role. Each is a little sentient being. It knows everything that you know, only in its own unique way. It performs 6 trillion functions every moment. These cells come into being, they function, they die, they're replaced by new ones. Can you see that? See the killer cells. They're attacking disease germs and viruses. See the countless blood cells you have. And now you open your eyes, and what you've done is you've just communed with your body. Every cell in your body is rejoicing because you've recognized it. And we can do this every day to kind of get in touch with ourselves. And so could you kind of see where I was going with that, Doug?
Yeah, it seems, and again, just, you know, going over it, just to the state of mind where you can actually get this done without interference. I mean, it seems like, you know, you get there, but how do I prevent the outside influences, outside interferences from jumping into this and disrupting it?
Well, that's a very good question, and we've just had a good example of that. Because, on my end of the phone, the lady caller who came in, there was all types of conversation and commotion from her phone. And, yes, it can be distracting. You just need to keep with it, and you keep going, and you try to minimize the distractions that you have. Sometimes you can't possibly get rid of all the distractions, and so that is why you're doing this. You're communing, you're putting yourself into the moment, and the outside world kind of gets pushed out as you're doing this this communion. And the secret is you just keep working at it. Now, a very interesting thing is mindfulness meditation, which uses everything that you just talked about as a key to not only becoming in the now, but attaining a state of relaxation. Noises, as you sense the wind or you smell something, or you taste something, you recollect something and you taste it. This is mindfulness meditation, and you use all your senses as a way to be mindful of your existence. And this is the hip thing that's 5,000 years old, and this is also one of the ideal things that we have for reduction of our pain levels. So I can walk our audience through one of these. It's a little bit shorter than the other one. So for a mindfulness meditation, you do it sitting quietly. You get rid of all the distractions. You minimize everything. And after breathing, you close your eyes. You got your hands folded on your legs, and you use your senses. You hear the sounds. You smell the air. Feel your body. You try to be present in the moment, in the now. And when your mind begins to wander, you do 10 breaths, and you resume this open form of perception of everything that's within your environment. And so if I were doing this and I heard the commotion that we had from the other end of the caller, my mind would go to those voices and without judgment, listen to them very carefully, everything. The timbre of the voice, the high-pitchedness, and all of those outside distractions would not distract, but what they would become an element that puts us back into the moment. It's very, very odd how that works, but that's how it's done. So, you know, with this mindfulness meditation, whenever your mind wanders, that's okay. You just go back and you do 10 more deep breaths in through your nose, 1, 2, and then you exhale, 1, 2, 3, 4, in with your nose, 1, 2, and then you exhale, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you allow your senses to be engaged. You do that 10 times, you know, you do those deep breaths 10 times, and you go back to the quietness. And you'll have no random thoughts after a while, just quiet awareness of this moment and all the things, the dogs barking, the cars roaring, the smell of the lilac tree, all of that. And if you get away from that and your mind starts going willy-nilly into a random thought, which is normal for us, we've got this kind of popcorn kind of consciousness that we just can't keep our minds still. Just go off with, you know, where's my car keys? And, oh, I forgot to get milk, you know, for the kids. You know, these types of things. These are just random thoughts that are really unproductive for what we're trying to do, which is kind of rid the mind of all distractions like that in terms of thought. Perception is one thing. Thought is quite another. But by doing the practice for 20 minutes uninterrupted, you know, twice daily, it kind of puts you on the road to stress reduction, and it improves your physical and psychological health and all those other health benefits I was talking about, Doug.
You know, it seems to be a lot of problems. I know for myself, a lot of phone calls, and Denise, who was on the phone with us, our co-host and super incredible nurse, we get the interruptions for ourselves where just before we're getting to go to sleep at night, or we get woken up in the middle of the night where people are asking for help. And so when you end up trying to get to sleep, I know myself, if I'm, you know, bothered by something or something's bothering me, or I have a call for somebody else to help, and then that their situation bothers them, the sleep cycle and how well I sleep at night is just totally disrupted. And then with the weather changes now, the pain levels can be out of control, no matter what you do. But somehow, if I hear you right, by doing this stuff and reducing the outside influences, we can totally reduce the pain, get better sleep, and everything else can work out, right?
I think that that's very close to the reality of that. I've always noticed, at least in my own experience, when I lay my head down to sleep, if I start having a fantasy, say a sexual fantasy, I mean, we're all adults here, then that will keep me from dropping off to sleep. When there's random thoughts, well, I didn't do this, my head is just kind of like going and reliving all the activities, things that happened during the course of the day or the things I need to do tomorrow. When that little roller coaster is going on in my head, I have a hell of a time falling to sleep. But when I lay my head down and I try to think about nothing whatsoever, then I just kind of pop to sleep just like that. And, I mean, other people have their own methods. But I know in my case, if I just lay in bed and I just let my mind wander, it's very hard for me to fall asleep. I'm sure that must be that way for other people, too.
Well, I know I have that problem. Now, one thing, and again, when we're talking here, I mean, Charles, we can make everything real clear. You're not just speaking from a clinical and a point of view where you've read about this, you're talking about it. I mean, you're a cancer survivor, obviously Vietnam, Agent Orange and all this stuff. So you've had to go through this pain cycle, you've had to recover, you've had to work this out to make this work. So when you're teaching this, it's coming from a practical point of view. Hey, I've been there, and now I need to help other people get there, correct?
It is a long journey, too. And I feel that the universe put me through all of those things. And I went and I paid my dues, you know, with these types of experiences. And in order to, like, synthesize them into a manageable and simple form. And by doing that, I can speak directly to a person one-on-one, right to their heart. And I can say, well, this isn't just something that I read about in a book. This is how it's done. This is how I did it. This is how I taught others. This was the result that they got. And so it is all based on, of course, I had to do all the research. I had to go through all the pain and all those things, and I had to struggle through it until I came and got to the essence of what the problem is. And now I'm eminently qualified to be able to teach others to do that. And thus, you know, I wrote a couple books on it, and, you know, they weren't bestsellers or anything like that. But what they did get all the way around the world, and you get letters from people. I got a letter from somebody, for example, who was in Germany, who had fibromyalgia, and he was having a hell of a time. And it just so happened that my first wife, she had fibromyalgia, and she had employed these very same methods that we're talking about in order to confront her fibromyalgia. And she completely overcame that. So I was able, not only because my wife learned this from me, well, she ended up showing me how it was done, and then I was able to relay that experience to this this person. So in no way does this information end with myself. Once I teach someone, once they understand it and they apply it, nothing's going. The healing isn't going to come out of the sky and conk you on the head. You know, you have to go to a doctor. You have to get diagnosed, and you have to receive some type of treatment. And then comes the what we call the alternative or the adjunct practice that you do yourself. And when you do that, you're going to have the benefit. And then once you have that experience, you pass it on to other people. It's just like going to a good restaurant. And it just spreads in that fashion. And I really think that in 20 years, this is going to be absolutely commonplace, maybe taught in schools. I'm not talking about universities either, teaching kids how to be in the moment, teaching people and young kids how to address their own self-esteem issues and problems with weight through doing these kinds of things in their various forms. It's not just I'm telling you one strict thing. I'm talking specifically here on our show about how to reduce pain. This is kind of the laser beam I'm trying to shine on that subject, but it has an incredible amount of other applications as well.
Yeah, the one thing that runs across all of us, and I know Denise has worked on this forever and ever and ever as the rest of us, and Paul, who's the other co-host, is the frustration level of the veteran. I mean, when I go into the doctor and the doctor, you know you're sick, you know you're having problems, and the doctor denies any correlation between the exposures and the medical problems or denies any correlation between what's happened to you and what the health effects are, even though their internal memorandum and notes and medical directives confirm it, that frustration level becomes astronomical because the practitioner, rather than being an aide or an assistant to help you get well, wants to guide everything and say, well, hey, you're just making this all up in your mind, but pain is partially, yes, it's in the mind, but pain is very, very real.
Now, Doug, I've always advocated the importance of dreams, and this is not off the subject. The Native Americans, you know, have a whole dream mythology and how you get information. Your unconscious or your subconscious will deliver onto your conscious mind, your sleep mind, let's call it, and give you some symbols and perhaps give you awarenesses of if when there's something seriously wrong with you. That has proven to be true all my life. And I knew that I had cancer way before I was diagnosed. And it was only in hindsight I said, oh, yeah, that's what that meant. But the idea here is that it's these symbols that we can recognize, and we feel them in our gut. And if somebody has a poor diagnosis, they notice there's something wrong, and they go into the doctor, they know in their gut, and they're not very well read on the subject, they know something's wrong. Then you have to become proactive. The family has to become proactive. You may need to get a second opinion, a third opinion. And of course, you know, one needs to do research. It would be a perfect world if the physicians within the Veterans Administration or even on the outside, these things happen all the time. One doctor finds that there's nothing wrong, where another doctor says that diagnosis that he made is completely wrong. Here's what the problem is, and that's why we do this. So being proactive, I think, is the absolute best course of action, and that's where people like you are so very important, because we're, you know, you're helping teach people how to get their what's coming to them in terms of back pays and disability pays, but also making them aware that they may have been exposed to these various things. And you do have your pain, your discomfort, your disease is quite legitimate.
Yeah, I think that's part of the whole thing. So the next step, you know, you're out there, you're working with a doctor, you get a doctor that finally starts to communicate and work in a partnership with you, then you've got all these other alternative techniques for doing it. Whether you're civilian or the VA, how can you get your primary care physician to recognize the need and usefulness of these other techniques so that you can get some good hands-on instruction someplace other than just from us on the radio?
Well, my opinion on that, at least in the VA system, is that that's an internal challenge that they have. That, like, they had a clinic for staff throughout the entire country, whoever participated, I'm not sure. Hopefully it was hundreds or thousands, but it went to maybe 30 or 40 states, and it went all over the place. But nationwide, a veteran, in the entire VA system, all our clinicians, our primary care physicians, and our nurses need to be schooled in all of this, in pain management, and having a better understanding of all the various alternative methods, and become sensitive to that. When a veteran says, I'm hurting, they really mean it, they're hurting. And, you know, I think that their experience, there are people that try to use the system. I understand that. I see that all the time in my comings and goings at the VA. Invariably, there are the overwhelming majority of veterans that have complaints. These are very legitimate complaints, and they need to be addressed in all seriousness. And I think the only way to do that is through in-service education that they might have at the VA. And in the outside, I don't know. I really don't know how that can be addressed beyond a clinician or a number of doctors that are in a practice that they go for ongoing education, because all this information in the private sector is far more used and understood than it is in the VA. VA is very slow on the uptake, and you know it's a bureaucracy, wherein out there it's free enterprise. There's a big difference, I think.
So what are some other things? Okay, we'll look at this mindfulness meditation. Can you give us just some more examples, or kind of guide us through a nice slow or something here to help us? Because, I mean, we're rushing through getting a new introduction to something new, and we all definitely need to be able to use this and understand it.
Okay, well, I'm going to just kind of just go right off the top of my head. When I would, when I would be sitting down with someone, I would say, okay, depending upon your physical condition, and, you know, a lot of guys and gals, their bodies won't let them, you know, sit down on the floor, Native American style, you know, with their legs crossed. You can sit in a chair, your comfy chair. But try to maintain a good posture, if possible. And I'm saying, if possible, you sit with, you know, your spine very nice and straight. If not, that's not the end of the world. You're going to sit in whatever position is most comfortable for you. You're more than your body. That's one of the key things that I have to talk about. You're more than your body. You're more than your mind. You're more than your emotions. You're more than all these things. That's what being is. And when we do this mindful meditation, what we're doing is we're going all the way down to what you might call the soul level or the level of being. And so I would sit with somebody, and I would, in an ideal situation, I say, okay, we've got all distractions eliminated. Sit down, cross your legs, fold your hands in your lap, get your eyes closed. I say, okay, now deep, I want you to breathe in 1, 2 through your nose, and then exhale 1, 2, 3, 4. Naturally breathe in 1, 2, breathe out 1, 2, 3, 4. We go on like that for about 10 minutes. If we might do it 5 minutes. Maybe you want to start off at 1 minute. That's fine. But the idea is you do this until you relax. And then once you're relaxed, I would say to that person, close your eyes, your hands are folded, look inside, what do you see? And they would say, well, I don't see anything. I said, well, that's because you're looking with your eyeballs. Don't look with your eyeballs. You look with your inner eye. And what do you hear? Well, I hear a dog barking. Well, yes, just focus in on that dog barking. Just take that all in. And when you're doing that, when you're taking all that in, you are actually what you'll call in the moment and one step closer to being completely relaxed. And then I'm trying to get you to stop thinking. That sounds like a terrible thing. Yeah. Oh, I can't live without thinking. And I would say that there are two levels of thinking. There's the thinking that we do when we go to school, when we're reading a book, when we're listening to the teacher. We're designing something, but you notice that kind of thinking, we're always in the moment, always. Unless you're sitting in class daydreaming, but that's the kind of thing I'm saying that is unproductive. And I'm not talking in an artistic sense. Artists, they daydream, but their daydream is quite different than our normal waking. I'm thinking about this up here, and I'm thinking about that back there. Oh, damn, that made me feel awful. So there are two levels of thinking. What I'm trying to do is eliminate the thinking that's associated with these little popcorn bursts of ideas and nonsensical, unproductive thinking that really doesn't matter a fig. But the kind of thinking that I'm saying is very important and is essential and is part of our mind is the type that solves problems, the type that plans, these types of things. So they're two different things. So I'm bringing that person into a focused sensation or perception of this actual present moment, being fully present. And when they breathe in, because their mind has just went off course, I might say to them, what do you smell? Well, geez, the laundry needs changed. It needs to be washed. That's fine. But you might have the window open and smell that someone had just cut the grass. I say, what do you hear again? What do you hear? Because our hearing is very important. And you hear the tree rustling. And that's something. You're present in that actual moment of hearing the tree rustle. This sounds so simple and basic, Yet, and it's our natural state. Somehow we've got way away from there with all these considerations about things that are going to happen or not happen and fearful that they're going to happen. And then we have all this baggage that we're dragging up, or we congratulate ourselves for how wonderful we are and we kind of relive all that. These are what I would call unproductive and harmful, because all of that accumulates. It takes us away from where we need to be, which is centered. And when you're centered as such, when you're in the moment, you can make that shift of consciousness, then not only are you healthier psychologically and physically, all life becomes better. You're fully engaged with everything, with the environment. You're engaged with people when you're talking to them. You're not talking over them because you want to fit a word in edgewise. You're there. You're engaged. You're listening to them. You're looking at them. You're understanding them. You're assimilating everything that they're saying. And that is what the goal of mindfulness meditation is. And, you know, I generally tell people, if I was telling my student, well, I would like you to start off with 5 minutes. Can you keep your mind at ease for 5 minutes? Can you make yourself sit? Take 5 little minutes out of your life in the morning and just be still. And I'm honest to gosh, I get people to tell me, I don't have time for that. And it kind of really makes me laugh. It brings me back to a Zen koan, which is that they give people or the disciples in order to bring them into focus. If not now, when? If not now, when? That puts one automatically back into the moment. And this is what I'm always trying to do, is get the individual to address the idea. No, here, we're soldiers. I mean, we're all soldiers. And I mean, we went through boot camp. We have to have some sense of discipline. You mean we can't squeeze in 5 minutes? And 5 minutes in the morning to do, to be quiet? And it's just a matter of reprioritizing. What actually is important? Is that important to you? If it's not important, you're not going to get the benefit out of it. And I'm going to go even further to say that you should take this from 5 minutes to 10 minutes to 20 minutes. And the heavyweights, they go a whole 30 minutes, which is really not much in the world of meditation. But I'm saying that 20 minutes in the morning and the evening is pretty much the ideal. And when that happens, Dr. Herbert Benton of Deaconess Hospital that connected with Harvard University wrote a book called The Relaxation Response. And it was how people who use either mindful meditation or they uttered a prayer or they used a mantra were able to create an immune response in themselves, which clinically has been designated and proven over and over to be called the relaxation response. Improvement of blood pressure, heart rate, and it causes a person to have a substantial boost in their immune system.
You know, one of the things that come in here as we talk about this and try to plan it, the warrior, the soldier, the sailor, the airman, whatever have, the Marine, Coast Guard guy, too many of us have got it all tied up to where we're John Wayne and Rambo all tied up into a package. And even when you get into the civilian world and your military days are over, your military days are not really over, are they? I mean, they stay with you and they're part of you for your entire life.
Yes.
So this John Wayne Rambo image or the John Wayne Rambo attitude, how do you put that under control to where you come down to this? I mean, you're talking about the basic animal level. I mean, just your basic needs to focus on. Do you understand what I'm asking or concerned about?
Explain a little bit more for the audience.
Okay.
I'm not sure I 100% understood, but I want to understand exactly so I can try to answer.
The individual soldier, individualist one, we're tied up where we're still mean, tough, rough, and tumble, John Wayne. In other words, we can get by with all this stuff, or we don't need help, or somehow we can survive it, because it's just, we got to, what somebody will say, we'll just suck it up and drive on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just sucking up and drive on doesn't work, or trying to maintain John Wayne and Rambo, where you protect and pretend that you're immune and so tough and tough as nails, so to speak, when in reality, you're at the other end of the scale.
Well, obviously, this is like a will cause a high degree of suffering over the long term. Your loved ones will suffer for you. They'll say, "Oh, you know," they'll recognize that you need help. They'll see you're in pain. They'll see you're distressed, and yet you're trying to cope. You want to keep it all inside you. And the unfortunate part is that the body follows the mind. This is an absolute truth. So if you're all bottled up inside, if you're a time bomb ready to explode, you're filled with stress and anxiety and anger and all of these different type of, let's call them primitive emotions, then what's going to happen is physical problems are going to start manifesting one after another. They come forward, and there's been studies on this. I just believe this from my own experience. Things like congestive heart failure, things like cancer, even diabetes, all manner of affliction will start coming forward when you have all of that unreconciled within yourself. How do you get to that? I mean, get to these people. I don't know if you can get to them. I think the ones that can get to them, first and foremost, are their loved ones that need to try to persuade them that they need help or that they need something. You know, whether it's to see a therapist or they need to, you know, they just need to talk to their clergyman. Whatever it is, but. It'll invariably manifest as something that is painful or debilitating, and then at that point you're kind of up against the wall, and that's usually, well, I'd say that's almost always the case when I meet people. They usually have gone to the limit, and they've had all these various treatments, and nothing has worked, and they're absolutely miserable, and then they get plunked on my doorstep, and I have to find a way to reach them. I can't get up with them in the morning and say, hey, you need to put aside 5, 10, 20 minutes. It's the most important part of your day because this is what's going to get you well. I can't do that. I can't be there for them at night. You know, I can't tuck them in. It's just something that they have got to see the value of, and that's a matter of education and the right people speaking with them and saying the right words to get to their heart. But if they do these things, absolutely, they will all, invariably all of them, will experience some type of reduction in pain or other health benefits. But once you have a manifest disease or illness, or pain is, you know, an intractable kind of pain, at that point it becomes harder and harder. But, you know, an interesting thing is the more screwed up a person is that this gets to, the greater the advocate they become, which is very interesting. I've seen some of my pain students who have had absolutely horrific diagnosis, horrific pain, anxiety, you know, all the things we've been talking about. And once they started to apply these things that we're teaching of being in the moment, being in the now, relaxing and deep breathing and learning guided meditation, which we never even got to, but that's maybe for another show.
Yeah,
they become the strongest advocates. They're waving the flag, buddy. And they want to teach other people, you say, here, you got to meet Charles, that's great. But there's only so many Charleses to go around.
Well, that's the reason why we're doing this. We're going to continue to do this. Now, we got a couple minutes left here. I mean, in your other work that you're doing as one of the angels, I mean, yes. As a person, obviously death and taxes are inevitable. So as a person is reaching that end of the life and everything's coming apart, this guided meditation, this being in the now is crucial for, a peaceful death, if you can even have one. But it does work, doesn't it?
Yes, if you have been doing that all along, a person who has reached the absolute final stages of their life, that is not the time to be able to teach them these things because they're pretty much too much gripped by the phenomenon, the internal phenomenon that's happening to them. And so that's why it's very important for the staff or for the angel wings people like myself to have this ability to be able to go into the moment. And it's just a transfer of energy. Okay, I know that sounds too metaphysical for all you clinicians out there, but it really is true. If you can be in the moment, you can change the absolute atmosphere in that room, Doug. I swear to God, that's what happens. You can affect and guide that veteran. Now, the people, let's say, that are in palliative care who have just got there and, you know, they're not anywhere in any kind of extraordinary distress, you know, they're not in an active phase of dying. I suppose, in theory, that through kind conversation, you could do that. But I can't really honestly see a way to do that, to bring this into that particular stage of a person's life. And I think that there are other things that they're looking into which may be very productive in terms of, of end of life. End of life means to help a person be relieved of anxiety. There actually been many clinical trials of a very good success, and I know this may sound pretty 60s of me, but they're using psilocybin in order to induce a very mild hallucinogenic experience for the dying. And this experience, virtually every person that is a dying person in a palliative care who has entered into these studies has said that this was the greatest experience of my life. I'm no longer afraid.
Well, our time is up, Charles. Can we continue this on again for next month?
Yes, I'd like that.
Okay, well, God bless you again, Charles. Thank you, all the veterans. Here's some ideas to help you. There's more out there to learn. Have a good evening, and God bless America. Or hope, we hope he does anyway. Take care.